football on off the ball.
Mulroney's been nowhere near it. You just look at some of his interviews. He's talking about, I'm starting to catch fire now, I'm starting to feel good again. You know, it's July, like, what?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
That's it, Ronan Finn is with us now. You're on, you well?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me in, yeah.
I'm going to ask Keith straight away on this one, what Solskjaer said there. So basically, he summed up the game very well, I think. First 30, 35 minutes, really happy with the way they played. Pat also said after, Stephen Kenny was saying after the game, they didn't meet them physically, and that was the biggest concern they had. But second half, maybe the thing that will be the real sickener for Pats, as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, when they went to five at the back, competed a bit better, they were actually right in the game.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant... sum up of the game from Ollie. I thought the first checkpoint in the game, you want to get to 10, 15, 20 minutes at the score, still at nil all. When Besiktas score, like, there was a moment, I think it was in the fifth minute of the game, where Pats are having a little bit of a wave of attack, Besiktas win it, and the ball's around the corner. Like, there was no look, there was no visual confirmation, it was just around the corner. Joe Mario was unbelievable. Joe Mario and little Rafa Silva, they've been in around 100 caps for Portugal, the two of them. It's Tammy Abraham up front. Look, I hate using the saying there's levels to this game, but Besiktas are just on a different level, and I think Ollie was absolutely spot on. These games, from a Besiktas point of view, can come and be really, really difficult, but Besiktas in the first 45 minutes just put it away from Pats. And yeah, look, at tactically, we all know Stephen Kenny's brilliant tactically, but sometimes you just need to be a little bit more dogged and get after people. Forrester and Lennon in the middle, I don't think they work really well as a relationship. Forrester wants to get on the ball, wants to make things happen. Lennon wants to win the ball. But too often, Forrester was going hunting by himself and he was just getting picked off. I don't think you can play a front six or a midfield and the strikers of Forrester, Lennon, Levy, Mulroney, Melia and Power. Because there's only one ball getter in the midfield of that pitch, and with the front six that Besiktas have, they were always going to make chances. I always thought Pats were going to have to try and spoil the game and make it difficult. Yeah, so I think they carried over an awful lot of what they did from the League of Ireland. Very, very open. Some of their play going forward in the second half was brilliant. But the first half, to give you a little insight into how dominant it was, and I'm not a big fan of the XG, in the first half, Besiktas had an XG of 2.56. Pats' XG was zero. It was total dominance.
I'm surprised it's not a bit higher than that. Again, I'm not an XG merchant here, but like, just watching the game from the eye test, they could have had five or six goals.
They could, and that's the difference. Like, it was four at half time. It could have been 5, 6, 7. Some of the finishing at times from Joe Mario had a header cleared off the line as well. They were very, very slick, very comfortable on the ball, and everything was one or two touches. Even I had my daughter Jerry Ann at the match last night, and she just said they moved the ball so quick, Keto. I said, they do, because they know where each other is. It's just an understanding. And by the way, they haven't even started their season yet, so they've got another couple of levels to go. And Pat's players going over to Turkey next week is going to be a really difficult task.
Yeah, like, in Europe run, do you feel that kind of difference when you go to the really elite club and play against them? Because I know Joey Bryan was talking about that with Carabag as well. It was like one thing playing up in the north and getting a result against Linfield and Shelby being able to impose their game, then Carabag just felt like they were at a different level. Again, similarly, compared to what Pats had in Estonia last week, Besiktas just looked a totally better team last night.
Yeah, as Key alluded to, there is levels completely. Like, Besiktas, you know, proper football club, good manager come in, you look at their full internationals, Stephen will be true to what he does, always, you know, has this philosophy of 4-3-3. Maybe there's certain circumstances where you look to change that and you look to adapt, and as Keith said, you stay in the game. First 20 minutes, ideal situation is, you know, it's 0-0, you're still in the game, you're growing into the game. It was the complete opposite. The game was over after 20 minutes, 23 minutes was 3-0. And then, listen, second half, you come in, okay, it's 4-0. I mean, they're probably going to have a little bit more possession, but like, that's naturally going to come off the pedal a little bit, let Pats have a little bit of ball. They'll grow into the game, but at that stage, you know, the game is over, unfortunately. And that is the difference in European football. You stay in the game as long as you can. You're seeing Shells the night before, dogging in the performance, defended really well from a good shape, stay in the game, 5-3-2. You know, you had Kerr jumping out the right time, you had Harry Wood jumping out the right time, but they had their base. That's what they build from. Stephen's slightly different approach, probably a little bit more aggressive in a sense that we'll go toe-to-toe with you guys, but... and Stephen's worked for Stephen in the past. I played for Stephen for years. You know, we had really good success in Europe, you know, albeit 10 years ago, but still against top opposition. And we went against Zenit, toe-to-toe, 4-3-3. And, you know, we We lost by a goal both games, but that was Stephen's mindset, that was Stephen's philosophy, and that's what he believes in. Maybe in hindsight, could he have changed last night? That's the view of hindsight.
When he was in that with Dundalk, as you say, going to, say, Poznan, going to Zenit and feeling that you were toe-to-toe with them, did you even feel it within the group because of the quality you had with that Dundalk team that you could do that?
Yeah, it was just, in fairness to Stephen, his mindset was like, remember playing, whether it be Maccabi, Zenit, Legia Warsaw, and that was the Legia Warsaw game to qualify for the Champions League group stage. It was a proper game, maybe 40,000 people at it. Like, you know, proper atmosphere and mindset was, let's play, you know, 4-3-3, that's what we did. We didn't overthink it, we didn't overanalyse the opposition, that we had to readjust our shape. Maybe it was just the group we had and we were in good form, and that was just Stephen's mindset, and we believed in ourselves. I don't know whether Pat's group was maybe at that group or football has changed. But that was Stephen's philosophy and he believes in that. And obviously, Denny, I think he changed it at halftime. And I more watched the Rovers game last night, so I was more catching up on highlights. But by the sounds of it, did a better second half, grew into the game. But was that off the back of Beşiktaş just taking a foot off it?
Think about the second half, Keith, crucially, Pats couldn't get a second goal, which is, you know, maybe they get one or two more back. That gives you hope, as much as you expect in Istanbul next week for Beşiktaş to probably win that game as well. But Pats couldn't really convert the better player in the second half into actually getting a goal.
Yeah, but they didn't have a lot of chances. Simon Power scored a lovely goal early on in the second half, which Pats really needed, because I was listening to Off the Ball on the way home from Tala last night, and Nathan was sort of saying, at 4-0, you're thinking this could get into the record books for being embarrassing. Thankfully, it didn't, and you know, I was in Tala. I think there was fish and chips we were having last night up in the nice seats. I was with Brian Kerr. But yeah, I was thinking, what is Stephen Kenny going to say to them at halftime now? They're 4-0 down, they've been totally outclassed, and they've another 45 minutes to go. How do you get a reaction? And thankfully, whatever Stephen said, Ronan might give us a bit of insight into what Stephen's like at halftime. They went out, and the one question you would ask is, go and win the second half. They managed to do that. Simon Power scored a lovely goal. Mason had a great chance that he hit straight at the keeper. It's not a bad finish, but he shouldn't be giving the keeper a chance to save. If you get back to 4-2, that's maybe a little bit more respectable, but I'm sure Ole Gunnar would be looking, thinking, we could have had another 3 or 4 if we really wanted it when they came off the levels. But I'd love to know, Ronan, is Stephen, we know he's tactically very, very astute, he knows what he's doing. Is he a good man motivator? Is he somebody who can give you a bit of a rocket at half time if you're not doing well?
I think that's actually Stephen's best attribute, is his man motivation. My time with him, he had that ability to get maybe something out of, you know, I'm not saying an average player, an average team, but he can make them feel better than they are. Again, though, I think what I looked like from the highlights yesterday, I don't know whether it was just more of a tactical thing that they possibly just got their shape wrong or their system wrong, rather than a motivational thing. Now, I listened to his interview yesterday, last night, and he looked a bit despondent, because I know European football, Stephen takes great pride in that and he's had great results over the years. But I think he mentioned the physicality, and that's something that, you know, as a player, that can never be questioned. That should never be questioned. That's your bare minimum. You go out, you have a work ethic, you have a shape, you have a pride. You know, you see, obviously, right, it's in Tala last night, but it was still a brilliant, you know, a lot of travelling fans from Inchy Cork.
They took over the North Stand. They weren't all having fish and chips with Keith.
Absolutely. But the bare minimum, you have a shape, you make it difficult for Beşiktaş to actually track your runners. I think I've seen quite a few clips that, you know, balls being played around the corner and lads just not tracking their men, you know, giving away cheap fouls. And then was just seemed to be the team in the game. It was constant. And I suppose as a manager, if you're coming in at half time, right, regardless, we change shape, we work on this, tactically what we've put. If you're questioning, are they physically working hard enough? Are they being, is there a lack of intensity? Is there a lack of urgency? If that's the language, that's more of an issue than, you know, internally amongst the dressing room going, lads, like, this isn't being good enough. You know, right, tactically we can be outplayed, technically we can get outplayed, but we shouldn't be getting run off the ball. Like, Pat's, you know, 8 months into the season, should be as fit as anything. Shouldn't really be an excuse, to be honest.
Yeah, like, I appreciate, Keith, they have injuries. So between Aidan Keane, Bassetti particularly, who are both out at the moment, and Stephen was reeling off the injuries they had at the weekend. But again, like, they've kind of picked up this bit of form. They got the good result last week to qualify for this round. They won at the weekend. And you would have thought, actually, when you got a team who were 8 months into the season versus a particular team who were under pressure as well. There's talk about like Solskjaer getting the sack even before they went into this series of games, given what happened for them last season. You would have thought that at the very basic level, Pats would have those non-negotiables when it comes to work rate.
Yeah, you would have thought so. And again, a lot of people have said to me, oh, Pats have torn the corner, they're unbeaten in so many games.
You said last week, though, you kind of felt that maybe the results were masking some of the performance.
Yeah, I think the opposition weren't great that he played against, to be honest. I think the Hagelman game, they won the two games. I don't think Hagelman were up to much against Calgiu. In the first leg, Calgiu went down to nine men. They end up scoring in the last minute. They actually lose the second game but go through the tie overall, and then they went and beat UCC 8-0. Then they beat Waterford. The Waterford result's a brilliant result in the middle of all that, but generally the opposition that Pats have played against haven't been of the standard that, you know, that you'd be saying, I think they've turned the corner. I still think they've been way too open when they lose the ball. We know that Stephen Kenny will get his wing backs up really high, right back, left back. He will commit bodies, but when they lose it, they're so open. And in the League of Ireland, I don't think teams want to overcomplicate it. They don't really care, or, you know, the so-called lower teams don't really care about the possession stats. When they win it, they see the jugular open. A little bit like Drogs and Bowes last Friday. They just took up all the pressure, and when they seen a chance, they played over the top. Really, really simplistic football, but it can hurt teams when they're totally possession based. So look, I wouldn't be going over the top on this, because on paper Besiktas are a much, much better team. And again, I was speaking to Jamie Moore, the St. Pat's media officer, last night, and he said, look, to put this into context, Besiktas just put an offer in for Leicester's Wilfred Ndidi for 9 million. Pats have just signed a fella from Forest Green.
I know.
So, you know, there's levels to this game. Besiktas are a couple of levels beyond. But look, I think the second half, I think League of Ireland fans and Pats fans can take a little bit out of the first 20 minutes of the second half, that they competed really, really well. But again, I'm sure if you're in the Besiktas dressing room, you're thinking, we took our eye off the ball and came down a level.
I'll summarise what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to say about Mason Mealie. He basically said his movement is really good. He said Tottenham have got an excellent signing. Ronan was his kind of overall take. But he was also with the fact that Mealie in the second half sat back and one of their midfielders got through the work. It wasn't like he was just up front and making runs in behind. He was really impressed by him. What has your take been on Mason Mealie as we go through the last few months of him in Ireland before he moves?
Yeah, again, I haven't come up against him directly, but you just watch him from the outside in and reading all the reports. You just hear he's so physically impressive for such a young player. He's got, you know, real pace as well, so you're not like he's just going to be a real neat and tidy player. He actually can mix it, he can run in behind. So, yeah, listen, Pats have done brilliant business. They've been very brave and not letting the move go or the sale go at the early opportunity. They were brave. They held on to him and obviously maximised as much financial profit as they could get. And it's obviously brilliant business for the club. So without a doubt, seems like everything you read about was really positive. Stephen's been playing him a lot this season. So yeah, absolutely bright future. Hopefully one for the international team down the line and be a big plus for us as a country.
I guess just adding goals and consistency is the trick, but at such a young age, that will come with time.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, is he just turned 17? It's frighteningly young. He's just, because, you know, you're hearing him around, his name being mentioned maybe the last 18 months, doesn't mean he's still only 17. So naturally, there's going to be a lot of areas of his game that's going to be improved as soon as he goes into a off to London, whenever that may be. He'll be into a different environment. He'll obviously be, you're suddenly training with better players every single day. Suddenly you just start going up the ladder. Spurs have obviously seen something in him. They've invested a lot of money, but they see probably physically how impressive he is, how much more then we can get from him, and then they'll use him as an asset, worst case. Hopefully they are, you know, Spurs will look at him and they'll sell him on.
What do you make of his performance, Keith?
I think he did well. He was up against Palista, is a brilliant centre-half. His CV is unbelievable. He's been at Villarreal, Arsenal, Atletico Madrid. He's been around the block. And I thought Mason, did okay in a team that was obviously up against it. But one thing I think is very noticeable, and I would urge any young footballer that is looking at, you know, you look at social media now, it's all about kids nutmegging people and scoring, you know, brilliant goals. It's a little 10, 15 seconds they see on social media. You think, oh, well, that's what makes a footballer. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's been around with Manchester United, been there, done it, he referenced his work rate. Mm-hmm. He didn't reference what he did on the ball, he referenced what he did off the ball. And that's one thing, when I had Mason with the 17s at Pats, I look, he gets after the ball. He wants to win the ball back. And when you've got somebody who presses from the front and has talent, he's on the right track. He is. Look, there's a million different pitfalls that Mason could fall into between now and, you know, getting into a Premier League team. But he has everything. He has all of the weapons. He has all the attributes to go and be a brilliant, brilliant footballer. But again, any young footballer watching him, watch his work rate. Don't watch what he does on the ball. Watch his work rate, because that is what sets him apart at this level.
Before we get to having the Kosovo, where are you at with your injury now at the moment?
Yeah, I've been out for the last 8 weeks, so hopefully another 2 weeks. Been frustrating. You know, I've been lucky in my career, not had many injuries, so this is one. You're just, maybe it's down to age, I don't know, but it was just a bit of an unfortunate injury, you know, a couple of months ago. So I'm nearly back, hamstring issue, so nearly there. So we've been ticking along okay, game tonight, so another 2 weeks, hopefully back in with the lads.
Yeah, the decision, I suppose, to go back to UCD, like, part of that, I'm guessing, is you were looking at your education and, I guess, preparing for life after football to a certain extent as well. Was that the thinking in 23? Because I presume you could have stayed at Rovers, couldn't you? I think there was a contract on the table.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yes. Great relationship with everybody at Rovers. And, yeah, it was my own decision. Is it nice to maybe leave in your own terms, perhaps? Opportunity to go back and do a Masters kind of came up, and spoke to Stephen Bradley, and I've spoke about before, we good relationship, shook hands, and still have a very good relationship. But yeah, it was a decision that I made off the back of, you know, a long career starting in UCD with my degree, you know, coming full circle, go back, hopefully another year to go, but results have gone so far so good, and then hopefully then finish with the Masters next summer.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say Dundalk are probably going to win the First Division this year, but there's no reason UCD can't challenge for the playoffs here.
Yeah, no, we're good, and naturally UCD, we tend to get a bit better as the season goes on. It's just more experience, still a young group. New players will come on even the last couple of weeks. So, no, we're ticking along. We're in the playoff positions now, but we just got to keep winning, you know, make sure we solidify that place. Dundalk are out in front. Now, Cove, you know, Cove are second. Mm-hmm. They could still potentially catch some Cove, a good side too. But no, from our own point of view, we've been taking along some, as always with UCD, some really good young players who will have a future in the game. And, you know, it's nice to be there. It's a good environment, good people. And it's nice to just chip in with little pieces of advice if you can help them along the way. And the manager's brilliant. They've great relationship with, you know, the director's there, the manager's there, and it's a good club.
Not for a moment trying to retire you here, when you already said there's another year left, so you're 38, will still be you playing either in the First or Premier Division. But do you think about kind of coaching beyond your career, or where is your mind at with that now?
Yeah, I've done my badges. Well, I've done a badge, I've done my B. Potentially we'll look at doing an A. I could maybe more see it, not saying in the boardroom level, but perhaps in a role similar to that.
Right.
Business in between sport. Like, it's the area I'm studying in at the minute. So it's always been of interest to me. But I've dipped my toe into coaching at Rovers as a few years ago, and dealing with young academy players has kids, you know, has its frustrations. but that boardroom stuff is something that's always, like, I've been interested in business and sport. And listen, if there's a role there, when I'm finished, I look at it.
Okay. Last night, Stephen Bradley was saying he's a bit disappointed. He was kind of, there was a glass half full to a certain extent of what he said, which was the tie still in the balance going into Tallaght for them next week, 1-0 after the defeat in Kosovo last night. But given the way the Rovers have been playing, he was a bit disappointed with the performance, because, like, they would have been really happy to go 10 points clear, win against Derry at the weekend, rotate the squad a little bit. And we were all kind of thinking in the studio here yesterday there was a very good chance they were going to beat Ballycanny last night. Wasn't to be, though. 1-0 defeats left them with a lot to do next week.
Yeah, a lot to do, but still, I mean, the game is far from over. I mean, they're still in a very good position, you know, just traditionally over the years. Tallaght, they've got brilliant results, brought teams back to Tallaght. Even in my time, we've got brilliant results. Listen, they'll go back, they'll review the video. They probably didn't maybe hit the levels that they know they could. But they've no divine right to go over to, you know, Ballycanny and dominate the game. They know that. They've got some good players. Played against actually their striker a couple of years ago for Scoopy. At the Tunde, he scored last night. He scored, I think, 3 goals in the previous round. Good player. So they've got some good players, Ballycanny. They'll come to Tallaght with a game plan. They haven't got no game this weekend either. So all of a sudden, they've got, you know, 7 days to prepare. They'll come into Dublin next week, you know, being off the back of a fresh week's of training. And as a manager in between European games, you love that. You love that week's preparation. You can deload, then you can get going again. Rovers slightly different. They'll be travelling to Galway Sunday, you know, and naturally a tough game, you know, going down to John Caulfield, never easy.
Does he change it up a bit, Stephen, for this weekend? Because it's like, you kind of expect Derry are going to beat Cork. So therefore, you want to keep that 10-point buffer if you can ahead of cup weekend, the weekend after. So presumably he tries to go fairly strong for that. He probably has to go reasonably strong for the game in Galway.
But that's the beauty of Rovers, and now their players are all strong. You know what I mean? Their squad is so strong. I mean, it's a bit like listening to the Dublin GAA team of, you know, last years, where they're talking about the 2 15s going against each other. Like the two Rovers teams in a training game, if they had 11 v 11 going against each other, I'm telling you now, any team could beat each other on a different day. Mm. Like, it'd be so competitive. And, you know, you're looking at the Rovers bench last night, you're looking at the lads who are injured and didn't travel, the top players that will play any other club. So Stephen has that, and he's built that over the last 8 years, and he's earned the right to build that. They've, you know, they've been fantastic in the transfer market. They've been, recruitment's been really good. And he'll obviously switch it up on Sunday. He'll have to rest bodies, and then he'll have to get them back on again for next week.
Barry Murphy sent us yesterday. He was a bit surprised not to see Jack Byrne involved last week. And he was kind of wondering, is there a way back in, or how he's going to go over the next while? Like, when Jack is at his best, like, it seems European football would suit him really well. He can control the game. Do you see him getting back into this Rovers team, or is this just kind of a difficult run for him at the moment?
No, I think I was watching Jack Reesley, and he was, you know, he looked like he was playing well. So I don't know. Again, he's obviously picked up an injury over the last.
Because Baz thought it was a knock last week, but he said he checked before the comms, and he was told he was available.
Yeah, but you can get a knock in training, you know what I mean, the day before. So obviously there's been a knock. Something's happened that, you know, he's been, you know, I've just seen the managers say in the paper that they've left. You know, Aaron obviously came off at half time against Derry. Jack wasn't involved, so obviously just picked up something in training, and then it's up to Jack to get back in the team. But, you know, obviously for everybody at Rovers, they want Jack back in the team in Europe, so they've got a lot of work to do next week against Bacani to make sure that happens. But absolutely, Jack, you know, fantastic player, European football without a doubt suits him, you know, really good technical players on the pitch. And but you look at last night, I thought Dylan Watts was really good. He's been, you know, player of the year last year. Danny Mandreo, you know, Graham, hopefully will come back into the team. I know he's a bit of a knock. Hopefully he'll come back in the team. It's not like they're, even without Jack, they still have, you know, plenty of riches there.
Do you fancy him turn it around next week?
Yeah, I do. Somebody asked me a question the other day about the game, and I just said I fancied him to go through on the tie. Wasn't sure going over there was going to be, you know, you're dealing with conditions. Like, yeah, I mean, actually, not that easy to get results away in European football. But it's 1-0. You know, I think keepers made a brilliant save to keep it at 1-0. And then the rebound, the Bacani players hit it over. That was a big chance. That's a huge moment. All of a sudden, if it's 2-0, then you're really ready to maybe look at it. But I think Stephen will be really calm next week. They've got 90 minutes. And then if it needs to go to extra time, they'll do that. But I fancy them next week, yeah.
Yeah, like Keith, you were saying last week, we were chatting about, you know, Stephen Bradley's comments about the depth within this squad as well. Like, the depth of experience that these guys have had with European football over the last year as well. There's certainly been no panic in that Rovers camp about going into that second
league. No, there shouldn't be any panic. I think it's not an easy fix, but, you know, it's not like Rovers went over there, played their best football and still got overturned. A lot of them didn't turn up. They will say that the levels will go up in the next tie. So, yeah, I would still be fairly confident that Rovers could go through. I don't expect it to be easy, but I think they've got so much in that dressing room, and they've been into the trenches before. They know what to do, and yeah, I think Tallaght will be absolutely hopping. And, you know, sometimes we can be a little bit, you know, we're all looking at the Pats game, a big glamour toy, and in the background we're thinking our Rovers will go through. We need to just keep them really, you know, just keep them chomping at the bit. And one thing I'd love to ask you, Ronan, is over the last couple of years watching Shamrock Rovers in Europe, I've watched them play themselves into trouble so many times. They get to a level and you think, oh well, we'll do what we did in the League of Ireland and everything will be alright. There seems to be a progression in Rovers now. Although they weren't great last night, I've seen a few more longer balls, didn't play themselves into trouble as much. Do you see progression in Europe from Rovers in terms of the style of play, not just, well, this is how we're going to do it regardless of the opposition?
Yeah, well, they'll do it, obviously, a lot of analysis before the game. And then when you have Rory up front, like yesterday, you can go, like I seen, like they'll play a flat ball straight in the goal kick up into Rory's chest, and you'll bring someone into the team. Maybe Johnny last year probably wasn't as physical as Rory, that the ball couldn't be just like played in at a low height, and you can, you know, hold off a centre half.
Such a big asset to have, though. Like, watch him against Derry last week. He was an absolute nightmare.
That's what I mean. Yeah, even Derry last week. I mean, there was a pass, I think Matt Healy just played. Not saying it was an aimless ball. He just put it into an area. Rory was able to just hold off the centre half. All of a sudden, you're in the final third. You're actually in that box, and now you're playing from there. Rory's laying the ball off. Probably didn't have that last year. You know, Johnny's slightly different. They probably had a little bit more build-up, and then Johnny was playing down the sides. Yeah. I know Dylan and Johnny had a great relationship of, you know, playing on the half-turn. A bit like the goal Rory got last week, where Dylan just plays it around the corner. But obviously then having a player like Rory who can just take the pump, take the hit off the centre half, having that ability to take it in, get you up the pitch. So, I mean, they'll manage it with what's available, and I suppose that's the beauty of having different options. Last year, probably played a little bit around the corner, using Johnny's speed, you know, yesterday a little bit more, maybe slower in build-up. But sure, you go back to Tala, you know, as Keith said, the place would be hopping, you know, be a real proper atmosphere there. Rovers traditionally over the years got great results in Tala, and they know what's on the line. They've been there, it's an experienced group. They know to get into the next round, you know, if they've got to go and win the game. So they'll be tactical in the sense that they won't go all out, you know, from the word go. No panic. Stephen will be really calm. They'll do their work. But as I said, I think I fancy them over the two legs.
Well, look, best luck with your recovery as well. Intrigued to see they get on. Thanks a million for popping in.
Diverted, a 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things on a journey through Latin America.
I'm nervous, and police will use tear gas.
Yes, yes, yes!
Jesus!
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City!
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Loco, that's me, okay?
Diverted has been named among Apple Podcasts' best so far list of 2025.
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted. All 10 parts are available now for free via Apple Podcasts.
I thought Route 40 was the most lonely road in the world. It turns out Route 25 is somehow even lonelier.